Blog Talk Radio.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Listeners, you've just tuned into the Dynamic Dojo Radio Show. I'm Rashida De Jesus, and I'm joined by my co-host and brother in the martial arts, Sifu Robert Deal. Sifu Bob, how you doing today?
Sifu Rusty, I'm doing absolutely fabulous. How's my sister from the Greater Northwest?
We are doing good over here. We actually had some sun today. I actually pulled out my sunglasses. But it's still cold. I mean, I guess it isn't that cold. I mean, it could get colder, but it's about 40-something degrees, at least it was. I'm pretty sure it's getting down to the low 40s, getting into the high 30s. But other than that, it's really cool over here, and I don't have a cold this week.
That's a good thing.
You know, I mean, the last few shows have been tough because I've been having to, like, put Afrin up my nose and so that way I can talk. It was crazy. But, oh, my goodness. Well, I'm
Afrin
really...
Afrin up your nose?
Afrin.
Afrin. I thought you said aspirin. I'm like, what?
I think it's called Afrin. It's this stuff that you... spray.
It's a nasal spray. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a nasal spray. Yeah, and I was like, did I say aspirin? I hope not. But you're not supposed to use it for more than 3 days at a time, that kind of thing, because it'll cause rebound. So I don't want rebound congestion. That would suck. So
that would really suck. Yes.
Yeah. Well, I'm really excited about tonight's show. Our subject tonight. Yeah. For our listeners, our subject tonight is teaching kids martial arts. So if you're listening and if you happen to be a kids martial arts instructor or you have assistant coaches that are helping you teach kids, get them on this show. Not on the show, but get them to listen. Forward them the link and get them to listen because we've got two great guests and experts on teaching kids, and I'd like to introduce them, if I may. I'd like to start by introducing Sensei Dee Dee Goodman. Dee Dee Goodman is the chief instructor at the Kongnu Redwood Dojo, a school that she founded in 1992 in Oakland, California. She's been training in martial arts for more than 35 years and teaching it to adults and children for more than 25. She holds the rank of Rokudan, 6th degree black belt, in Kongnu, a Vietnamese martial art that blends hard and soft principles drawn from several Japanese, Chinese, and Vietnamese systems. Prior to joining Kongnu, she trained for many years in Taekwondo and Aikido, and some of her earliest martial arts training was in the style of Wu Ying Mun Karate under Pauline Short, a pioneer among women martial artists in the United States. Now, outside the dojo, she's also a writer and a poet, whose work has appeared in many publications. Her essay, quote-unquote, Learning from Children, Five Easy Lessons for Teachers, appears in the book Martial Arts Teachers on Teaching, edited by Carol Wiley, and this is through North Atlantic Books. She is also the author of the Kids, she is also the author of the Kids Karate Workbook, available on Amazon.com. It is my pleasure to welcome Sensei Dee Dee Goodman to the show. Welcome, Dee Dee.
Hey, thanks. Thanks for having me.
Our pleasure. Glad to have you on board. I'd like to introduce to our listeners now to Sensei Janet Goliger. Sensei Goliger is a 2nd degree black belt in Okinawan Shorinryu Shidokan Karate, a 2nd degree black belt in Okinawan Shorinryu Karate, and a member of the North American Beikoku Shidokan Karate Do Association. She's been training in martial arts since 1993. She's been teaching karate classes to children and adults since 1997, in addition to self-defense workshops to children and adults. I got that wrong. In addition to self-defense workshops for women and teenagers. There we go. Presently, Janet is employed as a physical education teacher and specialist with Glendale Unified School District in Glendale, California, where she has worked since September 1991. During the 1996-1997 school year, Janet created and instructed an anatomy and movement course designed specifically for elementary students, grades 4 through 6, and taught as part of the GAIT program in her district. Janet has also participated as a mentor teacher for the At-Risk program from October 1995 through June 1996. In addition, Janet currently teaches the CLASS class self-defense program as part of her physical education curriculum. Welcome, Sensei Goliger. Glad to have you aboard.
Thank you so much. Good to be here.
Awesome. Glad to have you both. Before we get to the interview, me and Bob are going to go ahead and move on to our shout-outs and our news bits, and we would like both of you to be our co-hosts for this particular segment, if you'd like. That means you can chime in at any time and comment on anything.
See, I've got a couple things first before we go into shout-out.
Sure.
Because this is a kid, I get these weird emails from my brother all the time.
From my brother.
These weird emails. And we can relate as, you know, the baby boomers coming up and what our parents said to us. This was an email. Now, there's 25 lists. I'm only going to name a few. But it's about what parents teach their kids.
Mm-hmm.
My parent, this is the first one. Now, it goes into what they taught them, and then it goes into what the parents actually said.
Okay.
It says, my parents taught me about time travel. If you don't straighten up, I'm going to knock you into the middle of next week.
Yeah.
Can you relate to that or what?
I can. My mom just said, I'm just going to tongue your head, and that meant that I was going to be knocked out until next year.
That's right. My parents taught me logic. Because I said so, that's why. My parents also taught me foresight. Make sure you wear clean underwear in case you're in an accident. My parents taught me irony. Keep crying and I'll give you something to cry about. My parents taught me about the science of osmosis. Shut your mouth and eat your supper. My parents taught me about stamina. You'll sit there until all that spinach is gone. My parents taught me about, this is my personal favorite, my parents taught me about the circle of life. I brought you into this world, and I can take you out.
Oh, God.
My parents taught me medical science. If you don't stop crossing your eyes, they're going to stick that way. And the last one, my parents taught me about justice. One day you'll have kids, and I hope they turn out just like you. My father always wished twins on me. Now,
wait a minute. Oh, God. Oh, I'm crying.
Now, remember you said if something bad is said, you have to put a disclaimer on the show. This show may contain adult content.
Yeah.
Now, to the other senseis on the line, there are some things I do not share with Sifu Rusty that I'm going to say on the show. And if I offend anybody, I am sorry. But this literally caught my attention. This was a commercial I saw yesterday on TV. I was watching TBS.
Uh-huh.
And there's a company called Bubba Knife. They make great blades for hunting and fishing. Well,
Bubba?
they've got Bubba, like Bubba Gump Shrimp. It's called Bubba Knife.
Okay, Bubba Knife.
They've got, now I don't know if this was the best idea for marketing because I didn't even know the name of the company. I didn't pay attention to the phone number because I was laughing too hard. Now my wife did not find these funny, okay?
Okay.
She had no sense of humor over this. They have one knife called the 9-inch Stiffy.
Okay.
And they have one knife called the 9-inch Penetrator. When this guy came up with these blades, I would love to have what this guy was drinking. Because you know, it's like, remember the movies with Ben Stiller, Little Fockers and Meet the Fockers?
Right.
You know, in the background, when this screenwriter was naming these, he was saying, give me another shot.
Oh, God.
And one more quick one.
Okay.
My doctor called this week. My daughter, the test came back negative. She doesn't have asthma, but she's still having breathing problems, and we sort of narrowed it down to stress.
Mm-hmm.
And my doctor suggested, why don't you take her to a psychologist? I said, well, you know, my wife's side of the family is kind of nuts, Doc. And I wasn't kidding. And she said, straight face, over the phone, you mean you're the sane one?
Oh, no. I love your doctor. Your doctor.
My doctor rocks. She really does.
Your doctor's funny. Oh, my gosh. Oh, man. Okay, hold
on.
And
that was it.
You made me cry, dude.
Dude, my wife didn't find it funny, and I said, honey, there's a million guys. When that commercial came on, I said, honey, there's a million guys out there that are almost wetting themselves.
Oh, man. Whew. All right. Gosh.
Okay.
God. Okay. Well, let's tone this down a little bit, because I do want to bring this to a little more of a serious note. Going into our news of the week, me and Sifu Bob, our thoughts go out to the family and students of Keiko Fukuda Shihan, 10th Dan Judo, the highest ranking female judo practitioner in the history of judo, and the last surviving student of the founder of judo, Jigoro Kano. I just learned that she passed away yesterday, and the martial arts world has lost a true living legend. In April of this year, she would have been 100 years old. So our thoughts and support go out to all of you who have been touched by this wonderful master. So rest in peace, Fukuda Shihan. That just completely saddened me when I learned of this last night. Oh, my goodness. It was I was fortunate enough to have the opportunity to just train in the same class that Fukuda Shihan was teaching. And Sensei Didi, you were there too, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. She had taught a class on, oh my goodness, I forgot the name of the two-person form.
Juno Kata.
Juno Kata. There we go. Juno Kata. She was teaching a seminar on Juno Kata, and it was just a joy to be training in her presence, and to see the screening of her the movie about her life, Mrs. Judo, Be Strong, Be Gentle, Be Beautiful. For those of you that haven't seen the movie yet, I'm going to place a link to that, at least to a trailer to that movie. I'm not quite sure how we can get the movie right now. I'm going to place that on the Dynamic Dojo Facebook page. So go to the page, and in the next couple hours, I'll post it here in the next couple hours, so that way everyone can get a chance to get their hands on that movie. It's a wonderful movie about her life. So rest in peace,
yeah.
Shihan. Wow. All right. I'd like to now go to Facebook shout-outs. I want to start off by giving a shout-out to one of our Facebook followers on the Dynamic Dojo Facebook page, Mr. John Rochelot, and he left a very simple comment on our page, which said, your show is awesome, exclamation point, exclamation point. And as simple as the comment may be, it really meant a lot to me and Sifu Robert, because me and Sifu Robert do this show on a strictly volunteer basis out of our love of the martial arts. And we like to have fun on the air as well, and we hope that our listeners are enjoying the show. And truthfully, we don't know how our show sounds or appears from a listener's point of view. So thank you so much, John, for that positive feedback. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Kind of off topic, but sort of on topic, I just found out today, Sifu Bob, that we hit 12,000 listeners.
I saw that. Wow. We've only had like 13, this is our 14th show.
Yeah, that's it. So 12,000 listeners. Thank you, listeners. Shout out goes to you guys. Thank you for all your support. Thank you, thank you, thank you. All right. Let's go to our next shout out. This next shout out is about an upcoming event that's still in the planning stages. This is called the Mace event. No, not the pepper spray. But this is actually the Martial Arts Communication Expo. And this particular event was actually started on another show that I co-host for. I co-host for Modern Combat Masters with our chief host, Grandmaster Daryl Sargent. And we had a show that featured all of the Blog Talk Radio martial arts show hosts, at least the ones that we know about. I'm sure there's other martial arts shows out there, but there's at least 10 to 12 show hosts within several networks on Blog Talk Radio that we got together on that show. And Shihan Allen Woodman just put out a thought. He said, hey, you know, maybe we should all get together get together and do an event, do a seminar or something like that. And that thought turned into everyone on the network and everyone involved with the networks that are involved getting together and making this happen. So we've actually got, we've already got like a few sponsors, if I remember correctly. We've already got some martial arts celebrities such as and Frank Dukes, Samuel Kwok, they're trying to get some of the show hosts to do seminars and some of the celebrities to do seminars. There's going to be an awards banquet, an exposition for vendors and stuff like that. I mean, Shihan Allen Woodman has gone above and beyond to try and get this going. And we don't have a venue yet, nor do we have a date, although we're shooting for sometime in July or even like maybe September or something like that. So, you know, we're still trying to find a venue. We're still trying to find more sponsors and stuff like that. But I just wanted to put the idea out there so that way all our listeners can know about it, because this is going to be the first event where people from the media, be it books, radio, TV, magazines, other publications, the whole nine yards, are going to get together and do this kind of exposition to feature how the media is proliferating the art and, most importantly, providing a sense of community within the martial arts world. Because let's face it, I mean, you know, we're all doing martial arts for around the same reason, I'm hoping, you know, being better people, fit people, and of course, learning to defend ourselves. But even then, you know, there might be places in the martial art world where we tend to separate from each other. My style is better than yours and stuff like that. And, you know, and the goal of this particular event is to bring everyone together. So anyhow, I just want to give a shout out to all the Blog Talk Radio networks out there that are contributing to this. We have Sifu Allen Goldberg's Action Power Network. We've got Hanshi Daniel Vena's Martial Arts Talk Radio, Shihan Allen Woodman's Sidekick Talk Radio, the DocRadio.net network, which has five shows. We've got Making the Connection, Professor Tom Currier's Warrior Talk Radio, Each One Teach One, and of course the one that I co-host, Modern Combat Masters, and I think I'm missing one. I'm missing a show. But there's so many media companies and networks out there on radio, TV, and stuff that are all getting together for this. So anyway, I just want to put a shout out to all those people. So yay, I'm excited. We're gonna see about trying to get you on Sifu Bob to hopefully teach a seminar. So
something happened on the West Coast.
What's that?
As if they have it on the West Coast.
Yeah, because they're talking about having it in Washington, D.C. So, I don't know. We'll see how that goes.
Well, I think out of all the seafood, out of all the shows that you named, I think you and I are the only West Coast implant. Everybody else is back east.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think you're right. So, you know, if we're missing a Blog Talk Radio show, listeners, that's stationed from the West Coast, let us know, because we'd like to get those networks on board. MMA, it doesn't matter what. So that'd be cool. All right, I'm going to turn it over to you, Bob. I know you've got some shout-outs.
This is what I've got. I've really got a multitask. I've got two phones open and people got emails going. Oh, this is nuts tonight. Well, if you're in the Burbank area, Steve and I like things that are free because we're broke.
That's right.
If you're in the Burbank area, Masters in Motions, which is taught at a park, a local park here, they're having a free Street Smart Women's Self-Defense class taught by Chris Kadamian. Now, Master Chris has been our guest on our show before, a few weeks back. And let's see, they're having a workshop, and I'm looking for the date here at Masters in Motion. The address is 1515 North Glen Oaks Boulevard in Burbank. March 9th, that is a Saturday.
Okay.
And they're looking to help young women that are starting to date, maybe even the older women that are afraid of elderly abuse, that sort of thing. They're going to do all the wrist grabs, all the real scenarios that women may face in the real world.
Cool.
That is very cool, and it's free, and Chris really gives back to the community, which I'm really impressed about. I just got an email from Clark Daly. He's promoting a March Open Martial Arts Championship on March 17, 2013 in the East Valley Community Center in Escondido, California. Now, Escondido is in San Diego County. You can go to their website, nccchampionships.com, and get more information there.
Very cool.
And one more. Now, we mentioned last week, Elaine Amato is always doing something. She's always doing something. Almost every week we announce something she's doing. Well, she's having a kata showdown at her dojo, which is in the Inland Empire area, which is Corona, California, that area, south of me, about an hour. Mm-hmm. That is going to be held February 23rd. 7th, Wednesday at 7 p.m., all students will receive a prize for participating. They will be put into teams, so it works on teamwork, self-esteem, and get out in front of others.
Awesome.
You can email her at ysrk@yzw.blackberry.net.
That's a Y? It looks like a V.
Is that a V? No, you're absolutely right. It's ysrk@bzw.blackberry.net.
Cool. Wow, kudos to Elaine Yamano, because she's always doing something for the community. Always. This is awesome. So shout out to Elaine Yamano. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Awesome. And you had one more, right?
No, that was it.
Oh, cool. Sensei Didi or Sensei Janet, do you guys have any events coming up?
Nothing at the moment.
Okay. All right. Well, okay. I've just got a few more shout-outs. This Tuesday, February 12th, there's another show on my network, the Seika Network, here on Blog Talk Radio, that is hosted by Lynn Yancha and Aaron Kester, and she is the host of Century Health Talk. Now, Century Health Talk airs every other Tuesday at 8 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. So her next episode is going to be this Tuesday, and she is going to be featuring a discussion on the benefits of Tai Chi and Qigong. And I'm one of the guests. And Sifu Aaron Irons, who is a licensed massage practitioner and a Qigong practitioner, was slated to be one of the guests, but unfortunately something came up and he won't be able to make it. So it looks like it might just be me, unless any of our listeners out there want to call in and talk about the Qigong side. Now, I do teach Tai Chi and Qigong, but it would be cool if there was someone else to help us talk about it. So if you're an external martial artist and want to learn a little bit about the internal arts of Tai Chi Chuan and Qigong and the benefits of these practices, do listen in and call in with your questions or comments. So, and that's going to be this this Tuesday at 8 p.m. You just have to look up Century Health Talk. And it's going to be flying under the Seika Network logo. So, yay. So I look forward to that. And one more before we go into Bob's weird news. I just want to place a shout-out out there to our Facebook friend, Elastic Steel. Now, Elastic Steel is always posting great stuff on the Dynamic Dojo Facebook page and always has great videos on fitness and especially proper stretching for muscles in relation to martial arts. And Elastic Steel writes, "Did you know that upper body training can seriously improve the power of your kicks and knee strikes? Just these simple exercises of the latissimus dorsi done correctly will improve your techniques." Now, the link to this particular YouTube video is on the Dynamic Dojo Facebook group page, and it's posted by Elastic Steel. So if you go to the Facebook page now, you'll have to scroll down maybe three scrolls, and you'll be able to see the video. It's a great video. And to tell you the truth, I didn't know that the lats did play that big of a part in knee strikes, especially the roundhouse kick as well. So awesome, awesome video. Go check it out. Yay.
Very cool. And
I know. Elastic Steel always has great videos. And if there are any other listeners out there on Facebook that has great stuff to share or have, if you have events, go ahead and post them up on the Dynamic Dojo Facebook page, and we'll go ahead and announce it at the next episode. So I think that's it for our shout-outs. I think it's time for Bob's
Weird News.
What do we got, Bob?
This week, it's about the Super Bowl. Did you know? Now, you and I didn't get a chance to watch because we had to prepare for the show, and we had the show last week.
Yeah.
There was a blackout during the game. Remember that?
I heard about that.
Well, they were blaming it on the amount of electricity that the halftime show took up. They thought halftime show had caused this blackout.
Yeah.
Guess what? That's not true.
What?
At first, it was done by an employee they thought had done it as a prank.
What?
But, tell me. He did it as a tribute to Black History Month.
Okay.
Now, since he did that, he has been let go, and the NFL is thinking about filing criminal charges against him.
Yeah, but what would you charge him with?
Yeah, exactly. You could charge him with something as minor as theft or grand larceny, because the time that the blackout happened, that was costing the news media a lot of money every minute that was blacked out.
Okay. Wow.
Just in time and camera time and all this, it could be a big deal. But you're right. At first, I thought, what could they charge him with?
Right.
But they can charge him with a lot. He could actually go to prison for that.
So, I mean, how do you go about doing that? You know, to just go to the breaker box and just flip the switch? I mean,
that's basically what he did. He went to the breaker box and flipped it. They were, and that's why they called the halftime show the cause of it, because they thought they blew a breaker.
Oh my God!
I know. Is that really worth your job? With jail time to do that? No.
What an idiot.
Well, completely.
Oh my God. So, and this has been confirmed that it was this guy. Did he admit to it? I mean,
he admitted to it in a press conference.
Oh, criminy. In public he admitted it. Oh my God.
On camera.
Oh my God.
If he goes to court, there's so much evidence now that he just pleads guilty and they take him off in cuffs.
Oh, man.
Well, I'm going to move on to the weird laws. Now, These are all from Illinois, and you and I as people could never live in Illinois because of this first law.
Okay.
In Illinois, being broke is illegal.
I love it. How did they enforce that?
Exactly. Check everybody's pocket.
I know. Right?
I think there's something that explains that too. Coming on the streets on Sunday is prohibited.
I felt a great disturbance in the force.
I knew you'd be able to use that one. In Chicago, fishing in your pajamas is illegal.
To do what?
Fish in your pajamas.
To fish in your pajamas. Oh, my gosh. Okay.
This next one's funny. In Joliet, it's illegal to mispronounce the word Joliet.
Well, that sucks.
Now, this next one's a weird one. It's like, who does this? It is illegal to give lighted cigars to dogs, cats, or any other domesticated pets. My wife's in the background going, don't do it, Dad.
As we always say, there had to have been a reason why these laws came up.
That's right. Somebody saw a photo opportunity with their dog smoking a big fat one. Standing on the 500 block of Illinois Avenue is prohibited, and I don't know why.
I wonder what's there.
Now, here's one that goes back to being broke in Illinois. You may be arrested for vagrancy if you do not have at least $1 on your person.
That's
how they check to see if you're broke.
Excuse me, sir. Reasonable.
I know. Excuse me. Pull over.
Yeah. How much money you got?
Can I see your license and your dollar, please?
Well, that is my weird laws for the week.
Awesome. Yay. I love that. Weird news. I love it. I love it. Awesome. Well, let's go ahead and let's just do a really, really short PSA break. And then I'd like to get into our discussion with Sensei Janet and Sensei Dee Dee about teaching kids. So this will take about, a minute and a half. So we'll be right back after this.
Packers.
Vikings.
Red State.
Blue State.
We come from different places.
Uptown.
Downtown.
We come to different conclusions.
Half empty.
Half full.
But no matter how different we are, we're all connected, and we can all make a difference. That's why United Way brings people, expertise, and resources together to improve the education, income, and health of our communities, the building blocks for a better life. When we live united, our efforts, magnified by others, add up to real change. Children succeed in school, families gain financial stability, the health of our neighbors improves, and suddenly, so do our communities. But real change won't happen without you.
Live united.
So let's look beyond our differences.
Live united.
One by one, let's make a difference. Let's reach out a hand to one and influence the condition of all.
Live united.
Give, advocate, volunteer. Live United. Sign up today at liveunited.org. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
Now, here's another health tip from ARC. Screening tests are a great way to catch health problems early when they're easier to treat or control. Talk with your doctor about screening tests for diabetes, breast cancer, high blood pressure, and other conditions to see which ones apply to you and how often you should be tested. Learn more online at healthcare411.org. A message from ARC, the U.S. Agency for Healthcare Research and Quality.
And now, on with the show.
All righty, and we are back. If you're just now tuning in, you just tuned into the Dynamic Dojo radio show with Restita and Robert. We're broadcasting live from Seattle, Washington. It is February 10th, and we have a great show in store for for you. We've got Sensei Janet Goliger and Sensei Dee Dee Goodman, and we'll all be discussing teaching kids martial arts. Our phone number here is 347-677-0699, so if you have any questions or if you're a kids instructor and would like to add your tips and suggestions for teaching kids, please feel free to call in. We've also got our chat board on our show marquee up. So, and the way to get to that is you want to go to the show marquee if you're listening live on Blog Talk Radio and just scroll down a little bit and you'll see a flash chat board down there. And if I remember correctly, as long as you're listening to the show, you're technically already logged into the board, if I remember correctly. So if you don't want to call in, feel free to type your questions in the chat board. So, all right. So welcome again, Sensei Janet and Sensei Dee Dee. Glad to have you.
Cool. Thank you.
Awesome. And me and Sifu Bob have been looking forward to discussing this for quite a while. Now, for me, I've noticed that while some people are incredible, incredible martial artists, at the same token, they probably shouldn't be teaching kids.
True. Very true.
You know, have you guys ever met people like that? They're incredible martial artists, but, you know, just aren't suited for teaching kids.
Yeah, well, I'd have to add that there are some who are incredible martial artists who shouldn't be teaching adults either.
Oh.
So
I have to agree with that.
They have to want to pay attention to and work with who's in front of them and not be completely taken up with how much they know and what their preconceptions are about
students. Now, do you feel that that for the most part that many teachers learn their way of teaching from their own teachers, or do you feel that their own self-expression would have something to do with how they teach?
Well,
I'll
say a couple things. Yeah, I think in the martial arts, your first model for how to teach martial arts is your own teacher. And that's actually a good starting point for teaching.
Mm-hmm.
But a person's personality always comes into play. And the key there is to find those parts of your personality that work for helping other people learn and helping other people get better. So everyone should, I think, develop their own style, but it should begin from successful model. Let's say if you got to the point where you're ready to teach, your teacher has brought you there, and a good place to start is with the things that worked for them. Mm-hmm. But your personality will come into play, and everyone should feel free to develop that, I think.
Right on. Sensei Janet?
Well, I think for me personally, you know, way I teach is my own style. But I have to say, of course, I've been influenced by certain, you know, senseis of mine and as well as other teachers that I actually teach with since I am also a school teacher.
Mm-hmm.
But I have to agree with Dee Dee that, you know, you have to take your own personality into there. And although some could be, you know, real drill sergeants because they just want you to get the technique and they just want to push, they have to be sensitive to the students.
Mm-hmm.
That's the most important part. They have to understand how much is a student capable of learning and that every student is going to learn at their own progress.
Mm-hmm. Right. So a good balance between, you know, getting the art across and being able to impart that information in ways that kids can understand. Is that the goal?
Absolutely. I mean, with children, they take things much differently than adults do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, an adult can take a harsh instructor and just go with it because that, you know, they're just there to learn. That's it. But children, their feelings, their emotions get involved, and we have to remember that they're just children. They're still learning, and they're not always going to be receptive to the harsh part or even glips that you may say to a child, they may take it so personally, instead of understanding, you know, you're just kidding around with them. It's a real fine line sometimes.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, I love teaching kids. And I, you know, over the years, I've found that it is hard to learn to find that balance. Because when I first started teaching, I was pretty much just a kid myself. I was 16 when I was given my first class. And now, luckily, I had great role models in my seniors and my sensei. And they were all very good at being able to impart the information. But at the same time, there was, you know, that bit of traditional, like hardcore old school type of thing. And, you know, being 16 and feeling, you know, invulnerable, you know what I mean? Full of piss and vinegar, so to speak. You know, it was hard for me to find that balance, especially when it came to teaching kids, you know, because I was so close to their age, you know what I mean? And, you know, my question back then when I was a teen was, do I want to relate to them as a kid, or do I want to relate to them as a teacher? And I had a really hard time with that up until I was in my mid-20s. I'm like, because I was still a kid at heart. And, it took a while for me to find my own personality. Now, speaking of personality, Dee Dee, you said, Dee Dee and Janet, you said something about personality. Is there a certain type of personality that would go better, you know, with teaching kids, or can anyone learn to teach kids martial arts?
Oh, I think anyone can learn. I mean, it all depends on, do they want to do it? You know, if you have somebody who loves children and wants them to, you know, understand why they're learning martial arts, you have to explain it. You have to, you know, come down to their level a little bit to make sure that they understand that it is for self-defense and nothing more, but that it really teaches them a lot of self-confidence, but that their self-confidence should not give them what I would call a false sense of security. Mm. You know, you want them to learn, but you want them to understand that they're going to always be learning.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just because you learn a technique or a kata or a self-defense, you know, move, or even how to speak with, you know, how to deal with bullies, you don't want them to get cocky about it. You want them to understand that it's, you know, it's something that's for their safety, and it has to be guarded a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Awesome.
Yeah. I'd agree that anyone can learn to teach kids. Mm-hmm. And again, I'm just repeating what Janet said. They have to want to learn it. And that means they have to want to pay attention to what kids are like and to what kids get. And they have to be open-minded and willing perhaps to change how they act when they're working with kids. Mm-hmm. What I don't think is that there's one single kind of good teacher for kids. Mm-hmm. There can be many approaches and many personality types that may seem contradictory, but that work equally. For example, there are some really excellent teachers who are constantly high energy, as though they're acting on a stage and making jokes and very theatrical, and kids like that and giggle and get engaged.
Mm-hmm.
There are others who are very serious and straightforward and plain-spoken, who can equally be very successful with kids and with keeping them engaged. So there isn't one single personality type, but what they have in common is paying close attention to what their students are learning and how they're learning it and how they're doing and adapting their lessons to get the best results.
That's a really good point, because I agree with what you said about how teachers should be willing to be open-minded enough to pay attention to the child, to how children are, and to the child's individual needs, because each child, I would imagine, joins martial arts for different reasons. And even then, you know, how children think can differ between the girls and the boys. And, you know, I've met many martial artists that would say, well, I'm no good with kids. And through knowing them, it makes me wonder, is it because they don't want to change, their way of teaching, or, you know, they want to stay in their comfort zone of teaching adults, you know, that kind of thing. Or I have met a couple people that would say, oh, well, I don't want to dumb down my art just for kids.
Right.
And, I have to beg to differ on that.
Right.
It's not about dumbing down the art. I mean, what are your guys' thoughts on that?
Well, I do know people who don't want to teach kids. We try to bring certain people out to teach at a seminar we hold every year, and some of them don't want to come because they're going to have to teach kids. And what they're afraid of, I think, is, well, they're afraid of the kids. They're afraid they'll not be able to control them or something. And the other thing they think that is wrong, in my opinion, is that they're going to have to make it all about games and fun. They think that teaching kids equals playing games and having fun, and that's not what they're used to doing, and so they don't want to do it. And what we tell them is, look, you know, these are just small, very serious, very capable students who really want to learn stuff from you. And if you come out here with a good plan, and we'll be there helping you, they will learn whatever you want to teach them, and you do not have to play games. There are teachers who play a lot of games, and you know, the kids enjoy them, but I really find the teachers I prefer and the teachers I like best are the ones who take it very seriously. They have a good time. They enjoy themselves, but they are really teaching serious martial arts.
Mm-hmm.
I have to totally agree with Dee Dee. On my end of it, I've been very fortunate. Every one of my senseis, and I can't think of one that didn't, were all excellent with children. They loved to work with the kids, and you know, even colleagues of mine in the martial arts, their JoJo's mainly catered to the children, more so than adults actually these days, which is really awesome. And, yeah, they do play some games every now and then, but you do have to be creative sometimes. But they're very, very serious about their martial arts, and they're very serious about their techniques as well. On the other side of it, being a teacher, I'm surrounded by people who love to teach children, of course.
Mm-hmm.
You know, being in a school district, a school system, but why are we there if not for the children? You know, I mean, if it wasn't for the kids, we wouldn't be there. I
right.
tell that to my kids all the
right.
day. Every day I tell them, you know, listen, you know, you really got to, you know, take some of this seriously. And although I like to have fun with them as well, they also know I'm very firm when it comes to something I truly believe in, which is the art of the martial arts and self-defense. And honestly, the kids understand that, but I tell them, you know, honestly, if you weren't here, I wouldn't be here either.
Right.
We are here for you. If it wasn't for you, none of us would have a job. None of us would be here. And I try to make sure some of the teachers that I encounter here and there that are harsh, I try to hope that they get that understanding as well.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I
really cool. Well, Janet, that is actually a great segue into my question. And we've got an educator listening that's been with LAUSD for about 25, going on 30 years, Miles Bonner. He sent me a message on Facebook.
Awesome.
But has your teaching ability with the kids on the martial arts side, has your teaching ability benefited from you being a Glendale Unified teacher?
Well, I don't know if it's benefited. I've been a teacher, actually, more than just Glendale. As you probably heard from my accent, I'm originally from New York, and I came out here by way of Florida. But I've been teaching for 34 years already.
Wow.
And I've been in the martial arts for 20 of those years. And honestly, I think it's something that, I don't know if I should, you know, if you're born with the art of being able to work with children. I've always worked with children. So, I mean, I've been working with kids since I was almost pretty much a kid myself. You know, I was, you know, a counselor for YMCAs and such. and moved up through ranks there. And I think I've always wanted to, you know, be a teacher, but, you know, mine was always the physical side of it. So I was I'm a physical education teacher. The martial arts part came later, actually, for me personally. But I grew to love it so much. And my thing was that I really felt that one part of my life was that I had to take my teaching ability and my martial arts ability and put it together to do something for these kids, because I was really getting sick to my stomach coming home and putting on the news and hearing about another abduction.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when I took it more seriously than ever. And that's when I had just turned, was actually studying to get my first black belt. And when I started my program and started writing it and researching and doing what I could. And but is my, you know, your original question was, is my teaching help? It always helps. Every year, every new year helps, because I learn more and more from my kids as well.
Well, Janet, I've always felt that teaching kids is an art form, knowing where that fine line is, because they have different emotions than we do. And certain triggers may set them off into a tizzy that most of us may or may not know how to control.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, Sensei Janet was, as I mentioned this before the show, she was inducted into the Masters Hall of Fame last year, even though her and I didn't get a chance to meet. Because of her, because of her giving back to the community and everything else she does within the martial arts.
Very cool.
Thank you.
Very, very cool. Awesome. Now, speaking of, you know, education, do you feel that martial arts teachers need additional or special education to start a kid's class, such as child psychology or classroom management or anything like that? Do you feel that it's that it would be helpful, or would it, you know, do teachers
have to? It certainly wouldn't hurt. It would not hurt. I think, honestly, you know, a lot of, like, you know, as you asked the very first question, you know, about martial arts instructors and all, and now they're not all that, you know, not every one of them is good with working with kids and, mm-hmm. You know, and their sensitivity and, you know, their technique and all. What the thing is that I think everyone who's going to teach a child should learn something, you know, and mm-hmm. are they going to learn it in a classroom themselves? Probably not. My idea of a martial arts sensei or instructor or junior instructor is to learn as you go. So mm-hmm. I would always suggest go and observe others. Go and mm-hmm. go into an actual school district. Go and mm-hmm. observe a physical education teacher, a classroom teacher. Learn to, you know, go and see how are their styles. What is their management techniques? And is mm-hmm. this something that could work for you? Go to another dojo and ask, you know, politely, may I watch how you work with your children, how you work with your students,
mm-hmm.
and see if that's something you may want to incorporate into your techniques. But, you know, it's all a matter of time. It's a lot of training. It's a lot of, you're going to get the good with the bad, and you're going to learn some from your mistakes and find out, you know, exactly, you know, what works, what doesn't work. You know, just mm-hmm. like any good teacher, you know, you can do a lot of classroom training, but until you get some hands-on, you're not going to know if it works.
Right.
I'm so happy to hear Sensei Janet saying that, because she has the teaching, school teaching credentials and experience, which
mm-hmm.
I lack entirely, and I learned entirely as a martial artist thrown into dojo working with kids, but
mm-hmm.
Nothing could be clearer than that you have to get in there and learn
mm-hmm.
on the job. Of course, any amount of training you can get, reading you can do, courses you can take, these will all contribute to your skills, but there's no substitute for going in there and trying things and for getting together with colleagues, which we mm-hmm. try to do a lot in every way we can, and talking about what works and what doesn't, and talking with the other instructors at the end of class about what worked and what didn't,
mm-hmm.
and finding your lessons wherever you can find them.
Mm-hmm. Right. Awesome. Let's go ahead and take a caller. We have a caller from area code 818-845. Welcome to the, I almost said Modern Combat Masters show.
Hey, watch that. Great show, but not this one. Hey, Miles.
Hi, Sifus and Sensei.
Hi.
My question is, how, for lack of a better word, how lethal of techniques do you teach the kids? Do you teach the eye jabs, the throat strikes?
Oh, good question.
And what, you know,
great question.
Does that depend on the kid or what? I'm going to hang up and listen to the response. Thank you.
Okay, awesome. Thanks for calling, Miles. That's a great question that Miles put out there.
Yeah.
You know, how, you know, what kind of techniques, you know, should we be teaching kids? Would that depend on their age? What are your thoughts on that?
There are a few techniques I don't teach the kids till they're older, until I know they're responsible.
Mm-hmm.
Now, these are martial arts techniques, and when you start to talk about serious self-defense,
mm-hmm.
other questions come up, and I'd really like to hear what Janet has to say about that. If we're mm-hmm. teaching how to get away from a bad guy, we might want kids to be aware of certain lethal or really nasty things that we don't want them accidentally doing to each other in class. So.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I don't want to step on you, Dee Dee. I was waiting for you to finish.
No. I'd love to hear what you teach.
What I do is, honestly, I really, you know, when I first put this program together, I had to think really seriously and clearly about this. And and honestly, I only teach three actual techniques to my my elementary students,
mm-hmm.
and that is number one, they only use a technique on an adult stranger. They never use it on another kid,
mm-hmm.
and they only use their words. It's only verbal for bullying situations,
mm-hmm.
But for a should they feel that they are in grave danger from an adult, the best thing is really just to back up and turn and run the other way. So I
mm-hmm.
teach them, number one, their first technique is how to yell no and how to flee the situation immediately to get to safety.
Mm-hmm.
If that's not possible, if they actually get grabbed, I teach them three specific techniques that they can do quickly and easily. And, of course, we do practice this. One is just a stomp down onto the foot,
mm-hmm.
onto the top of the foot, try to, you know, break or pop one of the small bones in the foot. The next is they step back and they kick hard and strong straight through the knee,
mm-hmm.
something that
awesome.
They can reach, because you have to make sure that whatever you're teaching a child, it's reachable.
Right.
You know, I hear so often from kids, well, my dad showed me this, and my dad taught me that, and my mom taught me this. And I go, really?
Yeah. Jab,
that's
cross,
not going to work.
Yeah.
You know, I'm like, you know, I'll say, okay, try it on me. And they look at me, well, I don't want to hurt you. No, go ahead. And I only do that knowing that it's not going to work.
Right.
But
right.
The bottom line is we have to remember who we're teaching this to. These are children. They're little people.
Right.
Okay. They don't have the height and they don't have the strength yet. So
right.
they can't muscle an adult. They have to use their balance and their movement to get out of situations. And so
mm-hmm.
stomping to the foot, kicking to the knee, should the, you know, attacker or perpetrator bend over, now the face is available, and I do teach a palm heel strike to the
mm-hmm.
face and to the throat, and honestly just grab the head and throw it to their knee. I teach them an elbow strike as well, as a rear to grab,
mm-hmm.
And I tell them, whatever you can hit, keep hitting it. You know,
mm-hmm.
don't worry how wonderful, how perfect your technique is. If you kick and they don't let go, kick again, kick again, kick again.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yell as loud as you can. And that's another thing, the yell versus the scream. The
right.
yell is power, the
right.
scream is fear. So you have to yell with conviction. And we practice yelling. We're actually out there, me and 72 kids at a time, yelling the word no.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll tell you, the first time, first couple of years I taught this, we got phone calls from people calling the school saying some kids yelling no. And the you know, the homes finally figured it out, and now they, you know, they don't call anymore. But I've also been doing, I've been teaching this now for almost 13 years in my school district. And
right.
And the kids understand, you know, it's the power of the yell and not the fear of the scream. That's
mm-hmm.
an important technique. When you go to physical techniques, it's whatever you can reach.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I specifically teach three, you know, actual techniques.
Mm-hmm. Very cool.
Oh, very cool. Now, you have to also remember the kids are sponges
mm-hmm.
because I got a very interesting phone call one day from my son, preschool, saying, why is he acting like a tiger and trying to slice somebody in the face?
Oh, no.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That was a phone call I didn't want to get.
Oh,
I guess,
man.
Right.
He was watching me.
Mm-hmm.
And I was doing some tiger.
Oh.
He decided to do it preschool.
Wow.
Well, the context is so important. And
yeah.
Your kid saw you practicing but wasn't in a class where you were teaching him the context of using
right.
those moves.
Right.
And likewise in Sensei Janet's class, where it is self-defense, the context is a self-defense situation. If your context is a martial arts class where kids are learning an art and practicing certain moves over and over, it might be a little different. You might make slightly different decisions about what to leave in and what to leave out, because
mm-hmm.
if you take just the martial arts class context, you are going to have quite a few kids who want to use this to play,
right.
no matter how many times we tell them
right.
not to. And so we might want to omit those techniques that we're teaching to the adults at the same level, which are going to get them in danger of hurting themselves or others if they mess around with them.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Exactly. I had an adult student that when his son was still in a bassinet, he would call me up and ask, Sifu, can I bring him to class? And I'm like, you know that, where are we going to put him? You know what I mean? Well, you know, my wife's, you know, not going to get out of work until a little bit later. And because I knew about, number one, context, and the kids are sponges, even at, you know, not walking age, I figured, okay, bring him over. We'll work forms. Solo techniques. No one's, you know, scratching each other's eyes out or throwing people on the ground and doing arm breaks or throat shots or eye gouges or anything like that. And by the time this little guy got into my Tiny Tigers class, which is around like three years old, he was able to do our first form. He's like, Sifu, I can do monkey one. I'm like, really? Show me monkey one. And he did it. And I was like, what? You're a sponge. You know, and this was years ago, so many years ago. And you know, that's when I realized, oh, my goodness, you know, whatever you teach the kids and however you teach the kids, you know, you do want to make sure that they understand the context and, you know, watch what you say, watch what you do, you know, you know what
mm-hmm.
I mean? They learn through the observation, they learn through the, you know, through listening, and it's just amazing, you know, and although there are some people out there that, you know, won't give kids that kind of credit, oh, they're too young, they're not going to get it, you know, that kind of thing, and it's just amazing what they can learn. Incredibly amazing. All right. Listeners, our phone number here is 347-677-0699. Our special guests are Sensei Dee Dee Goodman and Sensei Janet Oliger, and we are discussing teaching kids martial arts. I'd like to throw out one more question before we go to a short break. Now, we discussed, you know, whether or not we felt that teachers need special education, which, you know, we agree is helpful. Now, what are some things that people, if they get, you know, regardless of whether or not they get special education, what are some things that martial arts teachers should consider even before they add a kid's curriculum to their school, to their martial arts school? We'll start with Dee Dee. Was that you?
Oh, let's let Janet start this one.
Okay.
Give me a moment to think there.
Okay.
Well, when you say the school, are you talking about public school?
The dojo.
Or are you talking about
the
a dojo?
Dojo? Yeah, the dojo.
Well, and, you know, and I don't teach in a dojo right now. Mm-hmm. I was an, you know, I was an assistant instructor to my sensei.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, I always followed you know my sensei's you know leads as far as that goes, and you know the senseis I you know practiced under and trained under were very well seasoned, high ranking, and were great with kids.
Mm-hmm.
You know. So it's hard for me to say for a dojo what it is, you know, how do you put a curriculum together there? I was lucky enough and fortunate to have such wonderful senseis that they already knew, they had it in place already, basically.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we knew, like when I would teach the kids, it was different than teaching the adults. So yeah, part of the curriculum was you wanted to make sure that they were there for the right reason.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And that
mm-hmm.
that was really important. Were they there because they want to kick butt, or were they there to learn? Were
mm-hmm.
they there because you know they're scared about something, or are they there because they just want to you know they want to enjoy the martial art and they want to grow with it? You know,
mm-hmm.
when they're 6, 7, and 8, you know, they're there because probably their parents told them that, you know, we're going to try this, or
right.
they saw the old movies, you know, and they
mm-hmm.
want to fly through the air, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But what you have to do in any curriculum is you have to set all that aside and explain to children what martial arts is all about. That
mm-hmm.
it's an art, it's a technique, it's learning, and you have to have control, and you have to have respect for it. And you have to understand that it's not something to be used, you know, in every situation. It's something
mm-hmm.
to be used only when necessary.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where we weed out the kids that want to be there just for the fun of it and want to be there because they really want to learn.
Mm-hmm.
You have to make sure they understand that no matter what venue they're in, is that they understand that this is something that they can hurt somebody with, that they have to respect it, and they have to understand that, again, you don't want to give yourself a sense of a false sense of security with it.
Mm-hmm.
You want to make sure they understand, as one sensei told me a long, long time ago, you may learn something today, but before you become an expert at it, you may have to do it. You have to practice it over 1,000 times, and even then, you may not be an expert yet.
Mm-hmm.
And this is something that we try to instill in all our students, not just children but adults as well.
Right.
You know, they learn something, and go to a friend. Hey, let me show you what I learned. One of my things in my situation in the school district is I tell the children right away before I teach the very first technique, these techniques are for your safety only, and only if you're in danger.
Right.
Okay, they're never to be used on anyone else for any reason. You don't play around with it. You don't. You're not a teacher. You're not an instructor, and you're not a black belt, and you're not anything other than a student right now. You don't show this to anybody. You don't try to teach others. You know, look what I learned. Let me show you what I learned.
Mm-hmm.
You only show that to your parents. This is what I learned in class today. This is what I need to practice. And that's
right.
It. You know, so as far as a curriculum goes for a dojo, I'm going to have to leave that up to Sensei Dee Dee on that one. because, again, you know, mine was already in place for me.
Mm-hmm.
But in a school curriculum, now that's totally different.
Right.
It's a whole different place. First of all, we're outside most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
So we're we're in what you would call like a fishbowl. Anybody can watch what we're doing. They can see what we're doing. And although they're not, you know, it's not a secret technique or anything like that, we have to take it one step at a time, make sure children are understanding what they're learning, why they're learning it, and then how to actually utilize the technique. And that's all what, you know, built into the curriculums that I've created.
Okay. Right on.
Very cool.
Sensei Didi, how about you?
Yeah.
What do you think are some things martial arts instructors should consider if they're going to add a kid's curriculum to their dojo?
I think the first thing they need to be certain of is that the instructor who's going to take this on is committed to it and is going to follow through, even if they discover it's harder and more exhausting than they expected, so that they don't get something going and then drop it. They need to know that they have the staff and the help to keep the program going once they start. And they do need to have a clear idea of what values they want to teach the kids, as Sensei Janet was saying, about martial arts and when, what it's for, why you're learning it, when and how it's to be used, in addition to the specific curriculum. Now, most dojos have a style of martial art that they teach that will have a curriculum already, and the first thing they might discover or consider is that it might need to be broken into smaller bite-sized pieces for kids. When I started my dojo, I was teaching kids on a curriculum. We have a fairly specific set curriculum in my style, but the kids could not master the first stripe level techniques in less than a year. It was just too much for them, whereas an adult could get it pretty much down in 3 months. And so my instructor actually developed a belt system. He divided it up into bite-sized pieces so that the kids could see progress through belts and stripes in less than a year. You know, kids want to see their progress.
Exactly.
As much as we might prefer that they just simply wanted to train and didn't care about belts, but that's not too realistic in most cases. So we ended up dividing up the curriculum into more steps, and that, I think, is a fairly common occurrence across martial arts styles when they add a kid's program.
Yep, I'll agree. I also use the cue or the steps, the stripes, for all our belts, because, you know, like you, it's almost impossible for, you know, 6-year-olds to get the full first yellow belt requirements. I mean, it's tough. So, you know, we had to divide it up into 4 little bite-sized pieces ourselves, and we found that it's great because, you know, kids, you know, you tell an adult, okay, you know, your first test is going to be in 6 months. Okay. But 6 months is forever.
Absolutely.
It's forever. Yeah. And, you know, the last thing you want is for them to, you know, even though they know about the benefits of their training, the last thing you want is for them to get discouraged because they're not seeing a tangible, you know, the proof of their progress, that kind of thing. And for me, it works. You know, they know, hey, you know, my next stripe is coming up, and they stay engaged, and it's a great thing, I think. So, but those are great tips on what to consider before adding a kid's curriculum to one's dojo. And the reason why I ask is because, you know, more and more martial arts schools out there, if they're not already teaching kids, are considering adding a kid's curriculum to their fold, mainly because it does provide a sizable chunk of change. But unfortunately, there are some martial artists out there, all they see is the dollar signs. That's it. That's all they see. And, you know, and I might get some flack for that, you know. I mean, I'm sure that there not every teacher out there is in it because of the money, but there are some. And I just wanted to, you know, just kind of address that because, you know, yeah, you know, we might be able to get, you know, a sizable increase in class enrollment, you know, with a kids program. But as you both say, if a teacher isn't willing to commit and willing to be open-minded to consider the needs of the children, then, you know, that particular curriculum is just going to fold anyway. So,
if I may just interrupt one second there.
Sure.
For any dojo that's going to teach kids, you just got to make sure that you're there for the kid.
Exactly.
You know, if the kid is not having fun, if they're not enjoying what they're doing, they're not going to return. I mm-hmm. have seen so many dojos here in Los Angeles area go under. And some of it has been maybe the price, some of it may be the instruction. I don't know. You know, mm-hmm. That's not something I've really researched. But the ones that I do know of that are still going strong, and I can mention a few of my favorites, actually, because these people are just amazing. But, you know, they're going strong because the senseis there are amazing. They care. They're there for the kids. That's what they're there for. Now, you know, something you have to understand as far as dojos also, and this is from a business side, some of these senseis, this is all they do.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like they have a side job. This is their life.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yes, they have to maybe raise the price here and there. Maybe they have to have a certain amount because they have to make, they have to live, they have to breathe, they have to make their rent. But
mm-hmm.
What I like to tell some of them is, then you better be committed. You better
right.
be committed not only to your adults but to your children, because you know, children is the big thing right now.
Mm-hmm.
You get some real children's classes going, they're going to fill up.
Mm-hmm.
But if you have to make it fun, and you may have to make it so they want to come.
Exactly.
And you can't put a lot of boundaries on it. You know, you can only come this time, you have to open it up a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it may require a little more time from, you know, for instruction, but you have to do it, because these kids, they have very, very, very busy lives, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
mm-hmm.
from after school, they may have, you know, they may have karate, they may have jiu-jitsu, they may have some martial art, then they have soccer, they have AYSO, they have baseball, they have football, they
mm-hmm.
have, you know, they're going nonstop. The kids
right.
today are not like, well, when I was a kid, we didn't have all that going on. You know, you went out of school, you did your homework, you went out and played till the sun was coming down. And
exactly.
then you had to go inside. You know, we didn't have all these things going on at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Kids today, their lives are so crazy.
Yeah.
That
busy,
they're exhausted.
Crazy.
They
mm-hmm.
are busy, they are crazy, and you have to want them to be there. And if
mm-hmm.
they want to be there, you will have a successful dojo. But you have to make it that way.
Exactly.
For them. You know, they're
mm-hmm.
not going to walk in and go, okay, I'm ready. You know, you have to make them want to come every single time they have a class.
Awesome. Wonderful advice. Wonderful advice. Again, for our listeners, our number here is 347-677-0699. We're talking to Sensei Janet Goliger and Sensei Dee Dee Goodman on teaching kids martial arts. Let's go ahead and take a short break so that way our guests can, like, get a drink of water, kind of rest for a little bit. and then we'll be right back and we'll continue our discussion. So, again, our phone number here is 347-677-0699. We'll be back after this quick tune by Earth, Wind, and Fire. Earth, Wind & Fire with Fantasy. Our phone number here at the Dynamic Dojo radio show is 347-677-0699. And our special guests tonight are Sensei Janet Goliger and Sensei Dee Dee Goodman, and we are discussing teaching kids martial arts. Welcome back, everybody.
Thank you.
Hey, awesome. I want to talk a little bit now about, we talked about what people should consider when teaching a kid's class, but what about class structure? I'm pretty sure that's what some, if there are people out there that are assistant coaches and they're listening, I'm sure they want to know about class structure. What are your thoughts about how classes should be structured for optimum progress? Now, I'm guessing it would depend on the age of the class, but I guess in general, what advice would you have for people when they plan a kid's class? Who wants to start?
Okay, well, I guess I'll start.
Okay.
Well, you know, my curriculums focus also on, not only on elementary, but also on the middle and high school age levels.
Mm-hmm.
So as far as, you know, planning the focus of the curriculum, it has to be, make sure that it's geared towards the student, number
mm-hmm.
one. It's not always about the technique. It's about what are, you know, for self-defense, not martial arts in general, but for specifically self-defense,
mm-hmm.
we have to make sure that it's something that it's attainable,
mm-hmm.
that the techniques are attainable, that they're geared for that age group. You know, what I teach an 8-year-old is not what I would teach a 15-year-old,
mm-hmm.
okay, as far as, you know, at the beginning. You know, the rate of progression is going to be different. Their attention span is going to be different.
Mm-hmm.
We have to take all of this into consideration when developing any curriculum. As far as the focus of it, for the younger students, elementary say age, they're dealing with bullies. They're dealing with, unfortunately, kidnapping,
mm-hmm.
molestation. You know, there's all that. All of this has to be taken into account. And so if we're going to teach them how to defend themselves in those situations, we have to make sure that they're capable of doing these techniques and that they're techniques that are age-appropriate.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the first thing I have to take into consideration as a public school teacher as well. And so what I, like, again, what I teach my elementary students, which is just those three techniques that I mentioned earlier, the teenagers in my curriculum, the teenagers, they get a little bit more, okay,
mm-hmm.
because more they're going to be faced with more detailed problems. And
right.
so we have to make sure we prepare them for as much as possible that would be in their lives.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, this may not have anything to do really with what a dojo would teach. You know,
mm-hmm.
when I was going through the ranks of the dojo, everything as, you know, everybody, all of you were talking about, everything was, you know, piece by piece.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it took 6 months to get the belt, even as an adult. You know,
yeah.
it didn't take 3 months, 4 months. We were very traditional, as I like to think that many dojos are.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have to take into account that it takes time to learn.
Right.
No one's going to learn overnight. And, you know, you're going to have some that are going to learn things very quickly, and you're going to have some students that are going to, it's not going to, they're not going to absorb it as much. They're not going to, you know, put it together yet.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to take time. So you have to make sure that the focus is on somewhere in the mid-range, that you're taking care of the, you know, the student that excels quickly, and you're taking care of the student that is going to take more time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what
mm-hmm.
one student may be able to test in 6 months, but maybe the same student that started with them on the same day is not ready yet. And
mm-hmm.
we have to be very honest with them, too, and let them know you're not ready. Okay,
right.
And here's why. And you have
mm-hmm.
to give them some accountability as well. You have
mm-hmm.
to make
yes.
sure that they understand what it is they're learning, whether it's in a school system or if it's in a dojo, what it is they're learning and where they're going to take it and how far they can take it. You know, they can take it to the limits. There are,
mm-hmm.
you know, or I should say it's unlimited. But their rate of progression is what we have to take into account mostly.
Very good advice.
Very
good advice.
Good. Excellent. Now, let me ask you this, both of the senses. We live in a society of, because, you know, since Janet mentioned something about, you know, when we were kids, we went out and played after homework. Well,
mm-hmm.
you know, when we were kids, there were three TV stations. There weren't cable with 3,000
right.
TV stations or video games. So we didn't have the access to the in-home entertainment that now that we did then. You know, there was no in-home entertainment. You had to entertain yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Because we live in a society of instant gratification, how do you keep your classes fun for these kids?
Good question. Good question.
Well, yeah. You know what?
That's a very good question.
Martial arts is fun. Martial arts is inherently fun. And it's
mm-hmm.
easy to keep it fun in that sense. As far as instant gratification of getting stripes and belts and rewards, that is an issue that comes up all the time. There are a lot of kids who come in with a certain attitude that they're going to get a reward
right.
regularly, no matter what, whether they put out any effort or not.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a question we discuss a lot among all my colleagues. But as Sensei Janet said, you explain to them what is required and what they have to achieve and how they have to get there, what they have to show in order to get that reward.
Mm-hmm.
It is an issue, but it's one that we deal with it in an ongoing way. You're not ready for your belt yet, or you want to be ready for your belt. Here are the things you need to be working on.
Mm-hmm.
We, as teachers, try to make those things pleasant, enjoyable, fun. We make them appealing. But I think they're inherently appealing. Kids want to do martial arts. They want to do kicking and punching. We
mm-hmm.
have to teach them how to do that responsibly and
mm-hmm.
well. But they want to do this stuff. But, yes, we do have to deal with the desire for instant rewards all the time.
Right, I found that. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, and adding the fact that the teacher has to show the enthusiasm as well.
Exactly.
You know, they have
right.
to
yeah.
Yeah. You have to.
Yes.
In a sense, you have to give them a checklist. Okay, you've gotten this, this, and this. You're doing so great here, but now you still need this and this to achieve that. you know, and you could do that in a dojo or any situation, but the teacher has to be enthusiastic. If the teacher is enthusiastic about it, and as Dee Dee was saying, you know, kids want, they want to kick, they want to punch. Martial arts is fun, and we have to make it, we have just have to make sure that they're having fun doing it while they're also learning the serious part of it.
Exactly.
Right. I totally agree. Now, let's say you said to a child, and this is important to me, and because I've had to deal with it with my son, even though I can't teach him, I've taken him up through the ranks of other styles that I'm involved with. Now, let's say you said, okay, you're ready to test. They've got the technique down. Test day comes, they flat out forget everything. Flat out. We've all seen it. We've all done it. Well, we've had a brain fade one day.
Right.
As a nurturing instructor, you have a maternal instinct about you that I won't have. How do you deal with... Wow.
You just made it sound like guys don't have the capability to be nurturing.
And that's just not true.
But we all know it's true.
Totally not true.
Well, yeah, totally not true, but I tried to word it in a way that just jacked my stuff up. Anyway, how do you deal with a hurt child and nurture that they're not going to get so discouraged that they're going to leave and quit and have their parents all over you and that sort of thing? How do
That's
you deal
a good
with
question.
That?
Oh, I think boy. With that, right away, I mean, I could tell you, I've seen kids do it. They step up. They're ready to test. They're all excited, and then they just go blank.
Yeah.
I've seen it in adults. And you know, my first thing is to make them feel comfortable.
Right.
And as nervous as they are, you know, and you can see that they are, and they're about to cry. You start right away with show, you know, making sure they understand that you know they know the technique. Hey, I know you know it. Remember when you did this, and this?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, show me that. Can you remember that? And you got to prod them a little bit. It, I mean, it all depends on the age. If you're talking to a six-year-old, you got to take it one step at a time. You're talking to a 10-year-old, almost the same, but maybe not as nurturing, you know. You talk to a 15-year-old, hey, come on, you know this. I saw you do it. Remember when you did this? And you just kind of have to bring them back to where they are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the thing is, they forget because they're nervous, because they're unsure of themselves right now. And it's that terrible four-letter word, test, you know. And sometimes we may want to, you know, say to a child, don't worry that it's a test. It's really just showing us what you remember that you learned. And it all depends on the age that we're talking about and the emotional security of the child. You know, one child may be, yes, I'm ready to go, boom, boom, boom. They show every technique perfectly. And then the child standing next to them at the same age, you know, they're just, you know, looking around, looking for the butterflies. And you kind of have to bring them back to where they are and just kind of walk them through it a little bit. I'm not saying you have to hold their hand all the time, but you do. So there are going to be times that you have to just, you know, back off for a second. And you let the kid take a chance to take that breath.
Awesome.
I try to teach kids in regular class all the time that getting up in front of the group and making mistakes is not a terrible thing. I try to, you know, with the kids who will never volunteer for anything, I will drag out in front and will get them going, and I'll point out at the end of it, look, you did it totally wrong. Did anything terrible happen? Did anyone die? Did anyone get a broken arm? No. Is everyone still okay? Yes. You're fine. It's okay to get up and make mistakes. Nobody gets hurt. That's what class is for. That's what learning is for. And then hopefully you can draw on that on the test day as well. Look, you know, just go, just do it. Nobody's going to break their arm if you make a wrong move on your kata. No one's going to die. Everyone's going to be fine at the end of this. And try to get them through it. Now, a separate question might come up if a child really can't pass their test, which it rarely happens in a school where you don't put them up to test until you know they're completely ready. But suppose someone goes blank, you really can't promote them that day, and you know they're going to go home and cry to their dad, as he said, and want to quit. You know, you do have to think about what you're going to say to them,
right,
and how you're going to keep them coming back. I haven't had to deal with that too often, but I think if the students always understand that, A, that's a possibility, and B, it's not the end of the world, and that, in fact, the people who struggle the most at the beginning tend to do the best at the end.
Exactly.
Okay, well, it's funny. Sifu asked me today, she sent me an email, trying to come up with some more questions, and I drew a blank. I couldn't come up with anything to ask anybody. The only one I had was for special needs, and she asked that anyway. But have you ever had to deal with, because you mentioned bringing your kids in front of the class and making them do their kata or their technique or whatever to get them over their fear. Now, on the other side, have you ever had to deal with chastising from their classmates because they did a technique wrong? Or have you ever had in-house bullying that you've had to deal with?
Ah, good question.
Yeah. Well, that is a very good question. When I was in the dojo scene, honestly, I've never had that. The kids really understood why, you know, what we were doing, and I've never really seen one kid bother or pick on another kid for doing something wrong. And I think that was probably because myself and my senseis they were told right away we wouldn't tolerate such things. That doesn't belong in a dojo. In a dojo, we're here as a partnership. With the friendship, it is, and this is all comes down from, you know, our grandmaster as well. You know, it's a benevolent society, and we're friends here, and we're partners, and that's why even when we spar, we only go 50%, because you're there not to hurt your partner, but to practice your technique. But at the same time, we don't, you know, chastise anyone if they do something wrong. Because guess what? Someday you're going to do something wrong. And it's going to it happens to, and it, guess what? It happens to adults too. It happens to everyone. And so I think if you put it out there day one to your, you know, as your new students, I don't think you really have that problem. Now, I can't say it doesn't happen at all. It's going to. In my school situation, I've been very fortunate so far, and at least in my classes, I don't have anyone who I've never had a child, you know, say something, you know, derogatory or, you know, negative about another child when it came to working on our self-defense, you know. If anything, you know, we do in our curriculum, we do these scenarios. We try to use, like, real-life scenarios. And if anything, it's more of a laughter thing than a bullying kind of effect, but the nice thing is we all get to laugh together. I do want to make sure that my students understand they have to learn to laugh at themselves sometimes as well.
Exactly,
absolutely, I totally agree, and I'm glad you said that, Janet, because you come from a different background. What can I ask you? What type of school are you in? Are you in middle school, high school?
Actually, right now I teach elementary physical education. I teach grades 4, 5, and 6.
Okay, great.
But I have taught the middle school and high school age in the past.
Because, you know, that's where the bullying starts. You know, because Dee Dee had mentioned something about it's different for different ages, where maybe in elementary school it starts verbally, then in middle school, maybe in high school, it maybe starts physically.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you're inside a school, and Dee Dee, you may not be, but you teach a lot of kids. How do you deal with the outside elements that your students have to face every single day, the bullying? I was teaching a kid years and years ago, this kid's probably married with kids by now, and I was hearing some underlying stuff that was happening where I actually showed up at his school one day to make not to bother anybody. I just showed up in part to make sure he was safe.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
How do you deal with the outside element?
Well, for me, you know, it's part of my curriculum is to teach what we call part of our bullying session is, well, conflict resolution.
Mm-hmm.
And although I teach my kids, my first three lessons of our self-defense program for the elementary level is conflict resolution in school setting, and basically, you know, bullies of the, you know, school bullies, neighborhood bullies, and, of course, the all-almighty siblings.
Yeah.
And what we do, you know, it's my curriculum that really takes care of everything, is because the curriculum is based on the students working through scenarios. They create their own little scenarios, real life scenarios. And it's funny how real true to life bullying shows up, you know, in their scenarios. And in fact, sometimes they come to me afterwards and say, "I kind of have a problem. This is what's been going on." And I let, you know, we make sure they understand any kind of bullying, they can go to a parent, they can go to a teacher, they can have their friends assist them, but they need to speak up. That's number one, especially in the elementary school. But in the elementary school, like I said, they're going to deal mainly with mainly deal with bullies. In the middle school and high school levels, it's not so much bullies that they're dealing with. They're dealing with peer pressure. They're dealing with shakedowns. They're dealing with, you know, so much, you know, bullying to a higher extent, so to speak. And
yeah,
so,
they're dealing with bullies on steroids.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. But, you know, what we try to do is, and, you know, they're also dealing with a lot of what we call cyberbullying. You know, that's become, unfortunately, so crazy. But by problem solving through role playing is what I try to do. The kids actually get to listen to other kids, and sometimes they'll portray something that's actually happened to them, and it could be a student that's in the same class that did it to them.
Hmm.
And it's interesting how, you know, things come around, go around, and or go around, come around, and all of a sudden, you know, it starts making sense to the one that was the so-called bully. You know, I really messed up here. I shouldn't have done that.
Mm.
Or the one that was so scared before isn't so afraid anymore because they finally let it out. And
well,
so
it still comes down
to the fact that these kids need to know that they have a voice and they need to say something.
Mm-hmm.
Very cool.
Well,
Janet, let me ask you something then. With you dealing with it in that manner, have you ever, now I would get great gratification out of this, if you dealt with this in a certain manner, have you ever seen the bullying situation turn around and almost these kids become friends after being sworn enemies at one time?
Yes, I have, actually. And it's interesting, you know, just even recently, I'm teaching the program in two of my schools right now simultaneously. And it's interesting that as soon as we start the program, and my program starts, like I said, the first three lessons are solely about bullying. That's when kids right away feel that they can open up to me. And they come to me. And what we do is I actually bring the other kids aboard. And I say, listen, here's what's going on. You tell him what you're feeling, or you tell her what you're feeling, what's going on. And then I ask them, has this ever happened to you? Because what I let kids understand is bullying is not a way of life, number one. I tell them, what are bullies? Bullies are, they're either cowards because they're not by themselves. They usually have a sidekick or two with them.
Mm-hmm.
Or they may be abused themselves, and they don't know any other way to treat other people. You know, that's the only way they know how to get things done in their life. Or, you know, there's so many reasons that a child becomes a bully.
Mm-hmm.
That, it's not that we should have to understand it, but we have to know what it is so we can correct it. You know, it could
right.
be that they just don't know how to deal with other kids. They don't know what I call a people person. You know, they don't know how to associate with other children. We have to teach them. And, you know, and sometimes we have to teach them by actually saying, listen, you're being a bully. And how would you like it if this was happening to you? And you know, you have to go through the whole thing. But we have to do problem solving. I do the role playing so the kids can find their own ways to problem solve. And it's funny because I never tell them what to do. I tell them, this is the situation. Create your own scenario. And by them doing that, it's funny how often they take from their own actual life experience.
Ah.
But then from there, they have to show us their little skits, so to speak, in front of the whole class. And you know what? They get such satisfaction from it. They have so much fun doing it. But
right
they
on.
Also get the message out there, you know. Mm-hmm. And it's funny how when I watch some of the kids do it, I can usually at this point finally tell who's really doing it from something that really happened to them and who's just making up a situation.
Right.
Oh, and awesome. But the bottom line is you have to get them all all in front of you, and you have to explain what it is that's going on. You have to listen to them and find out from them what is going on, and then you can take action.
Awesome.
Very, very cool.
Very
that
cool.
That's an awesome answer. You know, that's why my son started martial arts, because he was being bullied. You're right. They're never alone. And one time, my son Brandon and I saw this kid at his middle school registration, and his father was with him. And Brandon's elbowing me, going, "Dad, don't say anything, because I want to slap his father."
And yet the father probably may not even know that his son is a bully.
Exactly. Or he may be teaching that. I go back to the Karate Kid scenario. They're teaching these kids how to be bullied.
Right.
And that could stem from the father being a bully himself.
Mm-hmm.
That's true. There's a lot of adult bullies out there.
Exactly. Well, we are getting close to time, but we do have a caller that would like to ask our guests a question. We have Joey from area code 845. Go ahead, Joey.
Hey, what's up, guys?
Hello.
Hey.
Welcome, Joey.
Doing good. Hey, didn't we know each other back in the day, bro?
Which
back
one?
Back in the day?
Yeah, dude, back in the day. We used to march together, bro.
I'm sorry, say that again, Joey. You broke up.
Yeah, we used to martial arts together back in the day, bro. Was that Sensei Joe? Remember him?
No, I don't believe so. So I mean, we could
maybe. Was it Sensei Tony?
Oh, maybe it was Tony, Bob.
Yeah, I think it was Sensei Tony. Yo, we used to...
Oh, you're breaking up, Joey.
You're breaking up really bad, Joey.
All right, guys, remember me and Robert, remember after we did karate, we hung out with those two Asian girls, remember?
You're breaking up a lot, buddy. Are you on a cell phone? Joey? I guess he was on a cell phone. Call back, Joey.
Call back on landline.
Call back. Well, you know, it's funny. He'd been holding for like 3 minutes, and he was fine, and all of a sudden he's gone, you know. So, Joey, call back. Please call back. He actually had a question for the both of you about he wanted to get his six-year-old into martial arts, and I thought he said that he wanted to teach his kids, and I think the question had to do something with that, if he should. But hopefully he'll call back to let us know, what his question was.
Okay.
Well, you know, since we kind of brought that up, you know, how do you guys feel about parents who are martial arts instructors teaching their kids? I mean, it's possible. I've seen many, you know, great martial artists teach their kids to be very strong martial artists, wonderful martial artists. But, you know, what? How do you feel about that? I guess it would depend on the parent, right?
Yeah,
it does. I'm gonna let Dee Dee go first on this one.
Okay.
All right. Well, I know many people who have dojo rat kids who some of them do great, but they usually end up being assigned to some other black belt to teach them, and there does come a bit of rebellion at a certain point. But nevertheless, some of them have grown up to be really awesome kids. I have also a black belt in my dojo who has two daughters in the dojo, and I know that they train at home, and I can see the positive results of that in their progress when they're in my class, and it can be a great thing. And a lot of the dynamic just depends on what their parent-child dynamic is and whether discipline is an issue or not and how much the kids really want to be there in the dojo. It can be great, or it can be great if you let someone else do the teaching, or it can just, you know, it depends.
Right.
I think, as GC was saying, you know, it all depends on the parent. You know, if they're able to be firm with their kid and teach them as they would teach any other child,
right.
I see no problem at all with it. I also have seen also, you know, as she calls them, you know, dojo rats, who are taught by other instructors instead because the parent does not want to be the teacher. And that's fine, too. There's nothing wrong with that until then maybe a certain age when the parent may say, okay, now I will step in and give you more. But, you know, it all depends on the parent and how they're going to deal with their own kid. They're going to deal with their own kid differently than they're going to deal with other kids.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sometimes I've seen that sometimes they're a little harder on them.
Right.
Yeah,
because it's their child.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, is that good? Is it bad? Well, again, it depends on the parent and the child and their relationship.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think it's something I can speak that much about except as an observer.
Now, if the parent has their kids in someone else's class, for example, my class, and the parent is also a student, and they're working with the kids at home, they do need to be in sync with what the head instructor wants that child to be working on at home. And I've seen cases, not often, but a few over the years, where the parent wants to go ahead and have their kid get way ahead of everyone else, teach them things that the head instructor reserves for a certain higher rank.
Mm-hmm.
And then it creates a little bit of friction in the dojo. I don't think most parents would do that, go against the wishes of the instructor, but it's something to consider.
I've heard of it happening. I've heard of it happening. And it almost happened in my studio once years ago. Luckily it didn't go into anything. It didn't turn into anything big. I just said, well, you know, how about I make the decision as to when they test for orange belt? How about
right.
that? And they're like, oh, and then they realized because they didn't know. They honestly thought that they were helping their child, you know, and I guess it was because, you know, he had no idea that we were working on a slightly different curriculum because he doesn't show up for the juniors class, right? So he just assumed that they were learning the same thing as the adults and was teaching them a form that was a half a step up on the belt cue scale. And, you know, he thought, oh, hey, you're going to be my rank now. And it's kind of like, well, stop it. Awesome. Well, we are running out of time. I just want to let Sensei Janet and Sensei Didi know that Shihan Alan Woodman had got a hold of me here on the chat board, and he is the gentleman that is helping make this whole martial arts communication exposition happen. He's also the owner and operator of Sidekick Publications that does a lot of magazines and books and stuff like that. He got a hold of me, and he said that he would be interested and supporting you guys. He wants to have you contact him about teaching, about each of you teaching a seminar with in his area. And he says, I love teaching our future, and, you know, we're always looking for great role models to help teach our kids. So after the show, what I'll do is I'll forward his contact information to you guys, so that way you guys can contact him. He's on Facebook, so you know if you want to contact him, that way, that's fine. But I'll also give you his email address and stuff.
Okay,
so that way,
great.
If you guys are
cool.
interested in teaching a seminar for him, then that would be cool.
Awesome.
And I'm pretty sure that he'd be willing to teach a seminar for you guys also, you know, back and forth. So, because it sounds, according to this chat board thing, that it's going both ways, that he'd love to teach a seminar for your guys' group and vice versa. So, you know, that's something to contact him about, and I'll give you guys that information a little bit later. All righty. Cool. Well, we are out of time. Thank you so much, Sensei Janet and Sensei Dee Dee, for joining us about this discussion about teaching kids. It was a wonderful and very informative show, and I'm hoping that our listeners that could not listen live with us tonight do take the time to listen to the archived version, because this archived version is going to be around for however long, and for however long Blog Talk Radio is going to be around, and I hope everyone listens to it, because a lot of great advice that many people can accidentally overlook when they get new kids class into their dojo and stuff like that. So thank you so much.
I have to say, Sifu, that this information that Dee Dee and Janet gave out tonight was invaluable.
Invaluable. I agree. Just wonderful, wonderful stuff. Thank you both so much for joining us. We might have to do a part two on this, because there's so much more that we can talk about in regards to teaching kids and even teenagers, because that's a completely mm-hmm. different animal right there. So
yeah,
you might be getting a call from me sometime in the future about doing a part two.
Well, thanks so much for having us.
Oh,
yes, very,
very
much
welcome.
So.
It was our pleasure.
And it's been a lot of fun. Thank you.
It has been. And we did go to the whole 2 hours.
We did.
How about that?
Awesome. Thank you, listeners, for tuning in. If you tuned in live with us, tune in next week as we have Sifu Ja Amen Mowgli join us. And we'll be talking about Tai Chi and his style of Tai Chi and the form that he developed based on his experience. So tune in for that one. If you have any questions about Tai Chi, you can tune into that. And also tune in to Century Health Talk this Tuesday. On the same network that we're on the Seika Network. Tune into Century Health Talk, and we'll also be talking about the benefits of Tai Chi on a general level. We won't be talking specifically about style or form or anything like that. So we'll see everyone next week. Good night, everyone. Have a great evening.
Good night.
Good night. Good night.